Well, for our guest this morning, you're going to discern a theme. And if you aren't discerning the theme, I don't know how you found us. The theme really is about growth and membership and sharing. Dick said that we are one of the great, best-kept secrets around. And it's pretty much if Garrison Keillor didn't make fun of us, nobody would have heard of us, despite the fact that we have had 4.5 presidents of the United States. Now, this isn't political, and Thomas Jefferson is the half president, since he was never actually a card-carrying member of a church, but he said nice things about us and didn't actually spit when he walked past Unitarian congregations. But let me say this, also a little different from the way Dick put it, which is we don't desperately need new people. The UUA doesn't desperately need new people. I think maybe the world desperately needs more people with the desire to live in communities of theological and even political diversity. The brand name is not as important as what it is that we try to do and model by creating communities of political, theological, and ethnic diversity. We would like to grow, but we would like to grow not because we need more bodies to make us feel more important and not because we need your money, although you may guests leave your PIN numbers with the membership people on your way out the door. All of those things would be nice, but growth comes from two things. One is that it's, for the most part, intentional. People say, you know something? We've got something good to share, and I'm a generous person, generous of spirit, and I want to share it with people. There are churches that believe they have a really good thing and don't want to share it. And I've actually done growth consulting work with some Unitarian Universalist churches who had that attitude. One growth workshop, I remember, I felt bad taking and cashing the check because I couldn't help them, but given their attitude, I cashed the check, which was when we went around the room and talked about growth. People were saying, well, you know, we've been together for 30 years, and the core group knows each other really well, and we've been through all of these things together, and new people, I guess it would be okay if they came here, but if they really need to stick to their own kind and talk amongst themselves, because breaking into our group is just, I mean, we just know each other too well, and they can never catch up with our experience. Oh. Well, they didn't grow. In fact, they ended up selling their building and merging and submerging into another congregation. You grow because you have a sense that there is something that we have together, which is not unanimity, which is not all being in agreement, which is not all just getting along fine all the time. Churches often use, and temples and mosques and ashrams, use a metaphor of family. And for some reason, whenever a religious professional talks about, we're family here, before you go into insulin shock, it's an interesting metaphor. Because I don't know about your family, but ours is full contact. We've got some cousins that aren't talking to us. We've got a whole branch of the family where there were 6 brothers and 3 of them aren't talking to each other, and their children are also not talking to each other. I have to tell you this, I don't understand at all. Because I can understand fighting with family, I can understand yelling and screaming and throwing things, but not talking, it just is not within my experience. But clearly, that is part of what family is. It's full contact. It's sometimes getting mad and raising your voice at somebody that you love. It's sometimes walking out the door and slamming it just to make sure they know you're mad in case you didn't indicate that when you turned red and were screaming. The door kind of punctuates that. About right, Danzig? Hallelujah. Power to the purple face. We are family. And so I don't want anybody luring in people under this kumbaya sentimentality idea that religion and good religious communities are just always in agreement with the same Stepford smiles on their faces. Because what we offer is an opportunity to be real, to be a place where people don't have to come in and believe that they have to buy into the group think. We may have to buy into the group idea of civility, of what we owe each other in terms of understanding the inherent worth and dignity of every individual, even when we getting so choked up on this, passionately disagree with them. Yes, that is a buy-in and a social convention. But politics, religion for Unitarian Universalists is not what we say we believe about God. There are all kinds of theological beliefs in here. And one of the problems, two major problems in terms of growth. One of them is that Unitarian Universalists are used to thinking of ourselves as articulate, as smart, as being able to communicate our ideas. And so when we meet somebody and they say, so, you're a Unitarian Universalist. What do you guys believe? Whatever you want. Is it okay if I believe this? Sure. Is it okay if I don't believe that? Yeah, right on, dude. And we present this kind of unconstitutional vagueness, which is to some extent accurate. And then the next thing that happens is people try to nail it down in the categories that they're used to thinking of in terms of religion. We use the paradigms that we know. My first time in North Africa, before I was in the Peace Corps, before I was trained in Arabic, I was on a bus going from Djerba back to Tunis. And I figured, hey, why don't I learn a little bit of Arabic? So I'm sitting next to a guy who spoke French, and I asked him, so what's the Arabic word for to be? Because that's where we start language. Oh, well, it's not where we should, but it's where we academically start language, is conjugating to be. And he smiled at me and said, be is not a verb in Arabic. And I went, oi. Well, interestingly enough, he understood oi perfectly. He was trilingual. So then I went to the other one. Okay, I can live with that. What's the verb to have? And he said, you're going to hate me, but have isn't a verb. It's a condition. And I went, never mind. The paradigm of how we understood each other's languages was completely different. So when Unitarian Universalists talk to people who don't know who and what we are, they ask the to be and to have questions. All right, so you can believe anything. Do you believe in God? Depends on what you mean by believe and what you mean by God. You now see the frustration coming up with them, and all of a sudden we're not feeling that articulate, which is very uncomfortable. And they say, okay, well, do you believe in Jesus? Good guy. That's somehow unsatisfying to people from a more Orthodox Christian background. All right, well, how about Moses? Totally, you know. Muhammad, a prophet, no question about it, as you understand prophet. Afterlife. Whatever you want. At this point, you've got two partners in a conversation that are frustrated with themselves and each other. The great philosopher from Vienna, Ludwig Wittgenstein, said in talking about games. He said, somebody wants to know what tic-tac-toe has to do with soccer, has to do with rugby. His answer was, don't think, look. And in terms of Unitarian Universalists, the issue is not so much to think in the normal categories of religion, what it is that people believe theologically, but how it is that we get the energy and inspiration to engage a complex and difficult world. How it is that we get up in the morning and act as if that was something important to do. That we get up and we listen to the news or read the newspaper and say, the world just is not too big that what I choose and what I do doesn't make a difference. Two negatives in that. Let me rephrase. We are not so small. That's another negative. What we choose and what we do makes a difference despite how you may feel after reading the paper in the morning. We make a difference to each other because we attempt to live out the religious values more than concentrating on the issues of observance. One of the things that I encounter all of the time when I'm teaching comparative religion is people have this, again, a paradigm of a hierarchy, which is, well, you got your least religious people out here, your hardcore humanists and skeptics, and then you've got your Unitarians who aren't really much better, and then you may get some of those liberal Congregationalists, and then Methodists, then we get to the Presbys, and then we get to the Episcopalians, and we'll throw out in some hardcore evangelicals over here, and then Catholics, and then God's shock troops, the Jesuits, and you've got this spectrum. In Judaism, you've got the same thing, from humanistic Jews to Reform to conservative to Orthodox to ultra-Orthodox to ultra-ultra-brand-new Orthodox, and all these categories. I do not for a moment concede that people who are at a more conservative and observant ritual are more religious than anyone anywhere on the spectrum. Because our view in general is religion is not what we believe, and it is not about ritual and observance. Ritual is a reminder of how to be. It isn't a replacement. You can beat breasts and drop to your knees and do every act of contrition imaginable, but if it doesn't truly enter your heart, and if it then does not find expression in healing from your hands, what was the point of it? So I guess it's we don't care what you think, we care what we do. That it's behavioral. It is don't think, look. Are we perfect in what we do? Absolutely not. Do we live all of our shared values of helping and healing? Not as much as we could, but instead of wallowing in guilt or in puffing ourselves up with a sense of superiority, we attempt to get re-engaged and reinvigorated into causes that we do not believe are lost. That's who the Unitarian Universalists are. There are lots of metaphors we can use. I've always liked the metaphor of the flowers, that we're not all the same, but we are enriched by the fact that there are different colors, different scents, different shapes of flowers, and that when we put them together, it's not all the same flower, but they're all flowers. We don't all have the same background and traditions and beliefs, but we are enriched by being together, exploring together, sharing together, dancing and weeping and engaging each other and our world together. Another metaphor that's used is that of a mosaic, that we take the different pieces and we put them together. Maybe it's more of a kaleidoscope, because we move and we shift and our ideas shift. When Peter DeVries was doing his wonderful satire of Unitarian Universalism called the Mackerel Plaza. He had in the Westport Unitarian Church, which was the model, a Calder mobile hanging above the chancel because it symbolized the Unitarians' tradition of blowing around in whatever the currents of change might be. All of that's true, and it's worth satirizing, but there's also something solid. When we have these conversations about what we believe and we feel awkward and we haven't done our elevator speech, we often default to the negative position, which is, well, Unitarian Universalists don't believe this, don't affirm that, and wouldn't even tolerate that. We are not simply the negatives of what we do not affirm. We are not running against Brand X. We are inviting Brand X in to share a journey with us. When you become a Unitarian Universalist, you don't have to give up your theological beliefs. At one time, Unitarianism meant simply the unity of God, and if you were a Trinitarian, please leave. At this point in our history, it is about the unity of humanity. It is about celebrating our human unity with all of the enriching diversity that we have. There are things that we do believe about life. There are things that we believe about the importance of life and of choice. We believe that we make a difference. We believe that whatever other worlds there may be, whatever dimensions, whether you want to make them theological or in physics, that this world counts, and that what we do with and for each other counts. And whether we are motivated by a cross or by a star, by a crescent moon or by a yin and yang, we are ultimately known, as the Gospels say, by our fruits, by the seeds that we sow, by the life that we nourish, by the fruits that we produce and share with our fellow human beings of every race, religion, ethnicity, and belief. It's hard to do. It's hard to do in family. It's hard to do in church, but it is worth attempting. Because if this world has a chance of making it to the next century, we are going to have to learn to live with people who don't think the way we do, who don't worship the way that we do, who have other styles and find other forms of spiritual nourishment. We're going to be part of a growth program. All of us are going to be part of a growth program. There will be radio, there will be newspapers, there will be commentary, there will be an intentional outreach to welcome new people in. I have one very strong belief, and hanging around men in locker rooms confirms this all of the time, which is that we're all in junior high school. Whatever our age, whatever our gender, we're in junior high school. We have all of the insecurities of junior high school. We have all of those insecurities of, there's a stranger there. Should I talk to a stranger, or should I talk to Al, who I know so well? Because I know how to talk to Al. I know where the limits are. I know how to joke. I know how to fight. I know how to run. I know all these things, but if I go up to a new person, maybe I'll offend them. Maybe I'll be condescending. Maybe after hello, I just won't know what to say, and I don't want to feel foolish. Well, just think how hard it is for strangers to walk into a room and not know the rules and not know anybody. It's very hard. It's an intentional act of courage, every new person who walks in here. So unless you were personally schlepped in by somebody that was already a member and you had someone to hang on to just in case no one would talk to you, there, all of you have on your resume acts of personal courage in having walked in here. And not just the new people today, almost all of you. And almost all of us, when we walk into a room like that, have two contradictory pieces of insecurity. What if nobody talks to me and I'm invisible? And that's can be humiliating. I've gone into Unitarian Universalist churches and have been invisible. And that's not a good thing. But the other equal and opposite worry is, what if they talk to me? What if they keep talking to me? What if they follow up and a salesman calls? What if they just don't let me go? What if I can't get the membership committee off of the phone and I have to get an injunction? It could be expensive to walk into that room. I will tell you a true story, both true and factual, that my wife and I were invited to go to a square dancing club as a tryout a number of years ago, and we got about 8 follow-up phone calls, and we got about 3 a week for the next 6 weeks inviting us back. We felt hammered. We felt not being heard. You know, it's a fine line because human beings don't come with a user's manual. So the job is to be open, to be welcoming, without being overbearing, obtrusive, condescending, and beating people up. And you know something? We're all smart enough to do it. And most of us, most of the time, are sensitive enough to read the signs and signals and have a sense of that. Because ultimately, growth doesn't come simply from the mechanical things that we do, though they're important. It comes from an attitude. And that attitude is the one that I talked about in the beginning. We have grown here from next to nothing to a fairly significant mid-sized congregation. And this would have been an astounding mob to have at Christmas 12 years ago. And this is now an August mob. We have grown really nicely, and we have built together something of real worth that gives spiritual nourishment, that inspires us with music, that attempts to transmit our learning and our values to another generation, that opens our doors and our hearts and our minds to other people. Do we do it perfectly? No. Are we attempting something grand? Absolutely. And everybody who participates with us is part of a truly noble experiment in building a community together and in interlocking communities. And so I invite everyone to be a part of this membership committee. And to the guests here today, you're invited too. And I hope that you will get at least one follow-up phone call. And if your response is, we came here accidentally and we thought it was going to be something completely different, that's fine. That's fine. You know, we do not have a triumphalist view that everybody in the world needs to be a Unitarian Universalist. We do have a triumphal vision that someday the world will have a view that not everyone needs to be the same.